N-Y-Y-S-T.
Hold up, why do they doubt the kid? I'm about to prove them all wrong again. I got a low tolerance, cause they don't even know where their problem is. It's me. You waiting on the boy to fail, then hold your breath and face your death. Cause you play a roulette with each step I progress, no less. Go ahead and place your bets. Cause we know where we at, we know we top tier. Cause all the hate that you bring, we know it stops here. I'm taking off like a rocketeer and stopping here. It's strange how they cannot see the future, but see profit here. Wait up.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back. This is episode 531 of the NYYST podcast. We are presented by NYY Underground. I'm your host, Christian. And just about 15, 20 minutes ago, the Yankees wrapped up a 6-1 win over the Boston Red Sox after we have now officially begun life without Aaron Judge. So if there's anything that I've come to learn over the last 10 years of doing this podcast is that if you are going to pre-record something and talk about a potential set of circumstances, those set of circumstances will happen in between the time that you click end on the show and when the show gets released the next morning. And that's now happened to us three times in 2026, as we talked about Luis Gil and his whole situation. And we had that news break in between Sunday and Monday morning. Anthony Volpe getting sent down, that broke in between Sunday night and Monday morning. And then we came on here Thursday to discuss all the scenarios about Aaron Judge and what happened about a half hour after the show had gone in the can. The Yankees announced that he does have a stress fracture in the rib. It is not thoracic outlet syndrome. And he's going to be basically on the shelf for about 4 to 6 weeks. They'll reevaluate and see where they go from there. So as we said on the show on Thursday night, and that was dropped on Friday morning, that is actually a pretty good scenario for the Yankees when you were looking at a situation where they were possibly going to be without Aaron Judge for the entire season. So to only be missing Aaron Judge for maybe 2+ months really isn't the bad news that I think a lot of us were anticipating. Now, is it good that the Yankees are going to be without Aaron Judge for that length of time? No, it's not. I mean, you can't sugarcoat it at all. But when you have a pretty good feeling and expect Aaron Judge to be back on the field sometime in August, with what you were feeling, you know, after he got taken out of the lineup on Tuesday through Thursday, yeah, you're going to sign for it. You're going to take it, and you're going to just hope that this team can stay above water long enough to get Aaron Judge back. And as we click record here, the Yankees are now technically tied for the American League East lead. They're a game back in the loss column, which, as everybody knows, that's what I look at. So as the Yankees go forward here, if they can just be a 500 team through the next 2 months, I don't really expect a lot out of the Rays. It's just that what is going to happen with the Toronto Blue Jays? Are the Toronto Blue Jays going to make that big second half run like they did last year? Because if they do, then the Yankees might be in a little bit of trouble in terms of winning the division. If they don't, then this is still a division that the Yankees should win with or without Aaron Judge. That's the one team you fear right now. Because as I've said all along, and as frustrated as you got with the Tampa Bay Rays and how well they were playing, they were like 21-4 over a 25-game stretch or whatever it was. I did not think that they had the horses here to keep up over 162. And the Yankees have cut six games off the lead in a matter of 10 days, and they haven't even played that well. So as long as Toronto doesn't make that big second half run here like they did in 2025, the Yankees are in a really, really good position to go out here and win the American League. And even if Toronto makes that big second half run, they're going to be still, in my mind, a postseason team. And not that you want to lower the expectations or lower the bar of what you expect out of the Yankees, but certain things become a reality when you don't have the best player in the entire sport on the team for 2.5 months. So as we move forward here, the Yankees' goal is simple. Be a 500 team. Maybe a little bit up. Play five games above over this next 2.5 month stretch. Because I heard today, it seems like the expectation that's put on the return of Aaron Judge is August 14th when they go to Toronto. And today's June 7th. So you're looking at a little bit more than 2 months here. So you figure in 6 to 8 weeks, he should be cleared to, maybe hopefully in 6 weeks, he's cleared to play or ramp up some baseball activities here. And then he's going to go out and have to go on a rehab. So August 14th really isn't a bad timetable considering what we were looking at. So just go out here, and they're 12 over right now. If you can be in that 15 to 17 over range on August 14th, I think the Yankees are in hell of a spot to go out here and get this division and make a deep run into October. So, yeah, it's all doom and gloom for the Yankees when you don't have Aaron Judge, but they're not in a bad spot here. And as people saying, the team is better than what it was in 2023 when Aaron Judge's injury sunk the entire season. They are a better team. They do have more options available to them than they did in 2023. They didn't have Ben Rice. They didn't have Cody Bellinger. You know, they didn't even have Jazz Chisholm or Trent Grisham. They had the walking corpses of DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo. That's a big difference. You know, Billy McKinney and guys like Willie Calhoun were taking ABs during that time period. And you're going to get Giancarlo Stanton back. And you're going to get Jason Dominguez back. So this is a deeper and better team where do I expect the Yankees to go run and hide over the next 2.5 months? No, I don't expect that because, again, you're taking Aaron Judge out of the lineup and it's going to have a trickle-down effect. But I do expect them to still play solid baseball, if not good baseball, and I still expect them to be in contention, if not the outright leaders in the American League East when he returns in August. So, obviously, crushing blow, you can't sugarcoat it anyway. But the alternative, not having him for the rest of the season, yeah, this is a hell of a spot right now. It's good news as far as I'm concerned. And they're in a good spot in the division. They're obviously in a good spot in the American League where they just got to poke up a little bit over 500 here over the next 2 months. And they'll be primed and ready to go with hopefully a healthy Max Fried, Gerrit Cole, Cam Schlittler, whatever they bring in at the deadline. Hopefully Ben Rice is not continues this MVP pace that he's on. And then Aaron Judge will be back. And all will be right in the world. And all was right in the world today in the Bronx here when Cam Schlittler had another good outing against the Boston Red Sox. 5 2/3, one earned run, although that run should have never scored. We'll get into that in a minute. He labored there in the fifth inning, which cost him going deeper into the game. The velocity was back up to where it was all season long. He looked a lot more like his regular self, I wouldn't say he was dominant like we've seen him at certain times. But hey, certainly a really good outing from Cam Schlittler today against the Boston Red Sox. So a lot of things went right for the Yankees today. A lot of things, you know, in terms of overall news went right for the Yankees regarding Aaron Judge. One thing we should talk about here is Austin Wells. It was a really weird thing that happened on Friday after they lost to the Red Sox, is that you heard that J.C. Ascara got sent down. You're bringing up Ollie Sanchez, who's not any great shakes by any stretch of the imagination. He's had cups of coffee in five major league seasons. He's not a good hitter. He had a barely above 700 OPS in AAA this year. But finally, somebody on the Yankees realized that it's not the best roster construction to have two left-handed catchers. And when both of them are as bad as Ascara and Wells have been, maybe you just bring up somebody because he's right-handed, because it can't be any worse. And then moments before the game got called yesterday, because it is a torrential hurricane slash tornado that swept through New York and New Jersey, we find out that Austin Wells went on the IL with cervical headaches, which are usually stemming from an issue with the neck. So is that the reason why Austin Wells has been so bad this year? I mean, Austin Wells wasn't really good last year, but he was still a guy with a 700 OPS and hit 20 home runs for you. And you take that in this lineup, especially out of the catching position. So is that a reason? I would have loved to have seen the Yankees, especially, I'm sure Ascara would have, for them to figure that out on Friday. This way you didn't have to pack a shit and start driving to Scranton, only be called back 12 hours later. But, hey, I'm glad they found something. Hopefully he can get it fixed, and hopefully he can, when he comes back, can be closer to the guy we saw in 2025 that can at least run into 20 home runs and be a competent major league hitter. Because he had become unplayable. And maybe there's a reason for it now. Although with Ollie Sanchez and J.C. Ascara, I think it'll actually get worse in terms of catching production, but maybe at least we have an answer on Austin Wells. Well, we don't have an answer on. Well, I have an answer on it. And that's Anthony Volpe. I wanted to come on this show throughout the course of this season here and give Anthony Volpe the benefit of the doubt. And I've tried to do that multiple times on this show and on social media, especially when the bar is set so low with some of the alternatives, that I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, to give him an opportunity to play himself into more playing time. And he did that for about a week or 10 days. And then, as is what we've become accustomed to, with Anthony Volpe, he returned to the milk carton boy, which is the nickname I've affectionately given to him as somebody that he's gone missing. And as we've seen today, Anthony Volpe really cost the Yankees in a big way, because now he's in the middle of a 3-for-25 stretch. He had two big outs with runners in scoring position, where a simple single could have really lifted this team when runs are at a premium, especially with Aaron Judge out, pops up both times. And then the biggest thing that he did today that really frustrated you is that when the Yankees get that two-out hit from Paul Goldschmidt to score the run and they go up 1-0, what does Anthony Volpe turn around and do after a great play by Cody Bellinger fielding the ball off the wall and getting the ball in? He completely butchers the relay throw and allows the runner to score. So now he's not even performing at the plate, 3-for-25 stretch here. OPS down around where his career numbers are in the 600s, okay? Then defensively, he cost the Yankees a run after we've seen what a struggle it was, especially today against Ranger Suarez, to score, immediately gives the run back because of a poor relay throw. I'm not going to get excited here when I say this, because I've done that enough. But after giving him the benefit of the doubt, throughout the course of the season. We're done here. Okay? We are done here doing that with Anthony Volpe. Jason Dominguez is on a rehab assignment. He will be back here shortly. There's one person and one person only that deserves to get sent down to Scranton that is currently on this roster when Jason Dominguez gets back, and that's Anthony Volpe. And you leave him down there unless you need an infielder for whatever reason, and then at that point, I'm probably thinking of calling up George Lombard, or if he's not ready still at that point, calling up Oswaldo Cabrera and telling Anthony Volpe, your time in the Bronx is done. I was at that point at the beginning of the year. The injury occurred. Other circumstances occurred to get him called back up here. He played relatively well. The at-bats looked better. And then he's completely reverted back to the player that everybody is sick and tired of watching every day. It's over. And like I said, I'm not going to come on here and I'm not going to scream and yell and get excited about any of it because there's no reason to. I'm going to state my opinion and give you what my feelings are on the situation and we'll move on from there. But there's no reason for Anthony Volpe to be given any more playing time than he's been given currently. You have, and I understand because Suarez was on the mound today, you wanted to stay away from the lefties, as many of them as you could. So Spencer Jones didn't play. Jose Caballero is a shortstop. Depending on the pitching matchup, it's Rosario or McMahon at third base. Anthony Volpe on the bench until Jason Dominguez is going to get back. And then you're going to say, well, you know, Jones is kind of a redundancy out there. I don't care. They probably will send down Spencer Jones because of that, because Jones got called up to replace Aaron Judge. And you don't need another outfielder with the flexibility guys like Schumann and Rosario could bring you, or Cabby in a pinch. But you just got to get Volpe off this team here. The Yankees are under 500 in games that Volpe has started this year. I mean, you can look it up. Today is the 17th game that Anthony Volpe has played in. I believe their record is now they're a game under 500. And you weren't even setting the bar that high for Anthony Volpe. And he can't even attain or keep up with that level of play. Because you turn around and you blink. And the OPS from Anthony Volpe is back down to, it was six. Let me look this up here. Where's Volpe? 644. That's even lower than his career at numbers. You know, you watch Caballero play, and he's always doing something to try to win a ball game. Rosario, always trying to do something to win a ball game. Even McMahon with his defense, even though not great this year, can do something to win a ball game. And he's shown a little bit of pop this year. In his OPS, 609. I mean, that's where you're like looking and saying, okay, Volpe, like that's your bar. But over his last seven games, his OPS is 305. Like we said, he's in a 3-for-25 stretch right now, batting 120 over the last seven games. Can't have it. Not when this is who you are historically. So he's going to get, I'm assuming he's going to continue to get some more playing time. But when Jason Dominguez is back, there's no room at the end for him. Okay. There's just not. And one thing I want to talk about here, which I think I may have mentioned this on the show on Thursday, was the Yankees' ability to score runs with two outs, because all of their runs today scored with two outs, including that big two-out rally in the eighth inning to net them five runs that put the game away. So Emmanuel Barbieri, who does a good job on the Yankees post game, was the one that I had heard these numbers from, and he updated them today. So with zero outs, the Yankees have scored 76 runs. With one out, they scored 107 runs. And two outs, they've scored 141 runs. That's a great quality for a baseball team to have, is to be able to score runs with two outs, because when you do that, that breaks the back of the other team. They're so close to getting out of the inning, especially today. There's nobody on. There's nothing cooking. Belly bangs one out of there. And even then, you're saying, okay, 2-1, we'll take down to the ninth with how hard it is to score runs. And you put Bednar on the mound, who's been on a good streak here of five scoreless innings in a row here. And then they just go bang, 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 bang. And it ends with the Jazz home run, who he's got to be better in all facets of the game. We know this. And this is why I keep bringing up Jazz Chisholm, because he has the talent to really help cover some of the deficiencies offensively the Yankees have while Judge is out. And he finally caught one today. And I watched all his bats intently. You know, Ranger Suarez is a really good pitcher in this league, and you wonder how he does it with some of the stuff that he has, especially today against Jazz, how he was missing some of these pitches that looked very hittable. If Jazz keys on one pitch to open up and try to pull a home run and then goes to a better approach through the rest of the at-bat, he can be deadly and work counts and get on base. You don't have to swing for the fences every chance you get. Hey, you know what? You might key on a pitch 1-1 to try to pull one out, and then later on in the at-bat, he hangs one. I'm not saying don't try to smash that. You know, circumstances change throughout the course of that bat, but you don't have to do it all the time, bro. You don't. Getting on base and trying to steal bases and doing things a little bit like that can really help this team. Obviously, you'll take three-run home runs. I'm not saying that you wouldn't. But, again, going back to Volpe, hey, Jazz was able to crack that three-run home run because Anthony Volpe wasn't a loser. He walked. Sometimes that's all you need. Let the next guy do it. So, yes, the Yankees still do have enough to go out here and win baseball games while Aaron Judge is out. That's why it shouldn't be all doom and gloom. I'm not saying that you should be happy about it. I did say it is good news that he'll be back in August. But this is a team, especially in a weak American league, that should be able to win enough baseball games without Aaron Judge in the lineup for the next 2 months to keep themselves in a prime position to make a run when he gets back. So, I mean, the Yankees are heading to Cleveland here. This is like the second time this year that they've faced the team twice in three series, right? This happened with Texas about a month ago. They were in Texas, had a series against Baltimore, and then played Texas again. And then they just saw Cleveland, had a series against Boston, and then they're facing the Guardians again. And the Yankees owe the Guardians a receipt here. They do. Just go out there and take 2 out of 3. Cole and Schiller had their worst outings of the year against the Guardians, so now you give Gavin Williams his worst outing of the year. The Yankees scored enough runs off of Gavin Williams last week to be able to win that game. It's just that, you know, this is one of those bad outings from one of your aces that you don't anticipate happening too often. So before we end the show with the Yankee talk here, with the look ahead here. So I did bring this up on Thursday night. And I said I wanted to come on here and be a happy boy. I wanted the Yankees to go take two out of three from the Red Sox. Didn't happen because of the rain out on Saturday. They split. I'll certainly, we'll take that right now. I wanted good news on Aaron Judge. It wasn't a 10-day IL. It's a lot longer than that, but we're going to get Aaron Judge back this year. That's good news. And what was the third part about that? I needed the Masters of the Universe to be good. And it wasn't. It was fucking great. Okay. I loved it. I love that movie so much. And I've done the Rocky podcast, The Thrill of the Fight. We concluded that back in February, right before the season started, or in March, I forget. But if you go through the archives of this podcast on the feed that you're listening to this on right now, you'll find it if you want to go back there and re-listen to it. And that's probably something I should have done after the season was over. But I don't know. And I've gotten a lot more comfortable doing solo shows because I have so many more in the bank that I think maybe that show would have turned out a little bit better, but whatever. It's neither here nor there. It was a passion project. We did it. Happy it's done. And I said that I don't think that there's anything that could possibly come out that could challenge Rocky Balboa for my favorite movie of all time. Well, Masters of the Universe has at least entered the chat. Now, I'm not going to say this was a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. I'm not going to come out here and say that at all. It was a little too campy at times. It was a little too cheesy at times. There was probably two instances when the comedy, if you want to call that, really took me out of the movie. But for 2 hours and 13 minutes, I relived my childhood. For 2 hours and 13 minutes, that was everything that I ever wanted out of a Masters of the Universe movie. It was serious when it needed to be serious. It paid homage to the 1983 cartoon. I don't want to ruin anything for anybody in terms of cameos. But if you're a fan of the 1987 movie, me personally, I'm not. Maybe you'll enjoy this as well. I heard on people pick up on things that connected it to the 2002 reboot. I've only seen the original five episodes, which kind of served like a little bit of an origin movie, which I did enjoy, and I have to go back and rewatch. I love this movie. It made me feel things that I haven't felt watching a movie since Rocky Balboa. And I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to be 43 years old later this year. If you're in that age bracket and you grew up on the Masters of the Universe, I'm talking the original OG cartoon, you have to go see this movie. You have to put money in the pockets of the studio that made this film because we need the sequel to this film. We need to show them that we love this movie. So I'm going to tell you this as somebody that watched that movie and that lo has loved the Masters Universe for 40 years here and has been waiting for this movie to come out since the disaster of the 1987 film. That was everything that I wanted that movie to be. It was worth waiting 40 years for it. And I was talking to somebody on the way out of the theater, and we both said the same thing. That was worth it. So I'm going to say this too. You might be seeing a lot of negative reviews about the movie coming from people. They're not the target audience of this movie. And I understand that might hold back the movie financially. But they're not people that grew up on this IP. They're not people that grew up on this franchise. They're not going to understand what made this movie so special. So they're not going to like it. And if that's you, I don't recommend this movie for you. But if you are a person like me that grew up on this, you have to go see this movie. You do. And like I said, it's not perfect. Okay? There's a lot, there's plenty to nitpick about it, about what I didn't like about it. But because of how I felt watching it, and overall how good it really was for something that you waited 40 years for, it's an 8 out of 10 movie. It really is. The ending of the movie, not the climactic battle, but the ending of this movie, the only thing that I can liken it to is when the final bell struck in Rocky Balboa, and then the final bell played, and Rocky walked down the aisle with that song blaring, getting the adulation from the fans, and how I felt in that exact moment. That's the closest I've ever felt watching a movie since that movie came out in 2006. The final scene of the movie. And now there's three post-credit scenes. One happens immediately, and I think longtime fans of the show are going to love it immediately because somebody's going to pop up that you've been waiting for to see in the big screen. There's the mid-credit scene, which everybody's going batshit over, and is exactly why we need the sequel. And then there's the very end credit scene, which if you're at that point you want to leave, you can, and find it online. It doesn't really, to me, it doesn't really add anything to the lore or next chapter. I mean, it could possibly, but I would say if you want to see it, see it. But I don't think you need to see it. Like, you need to see the mid-credit scene. Overall, man, I am very firm on my 8 out of 10 ranking on this. And I would love to go see it again in theaters. I can't wait till it hits streaming. It's obviously going to be on Prime since Amazon is the studio that distributed it. I can't wait to see it again. I loved it, man. I really, really did. Despite its very, at times, glaring flaws. And I think if you watch the 1983 cartoon and understand who He-Man slash Prince Adam was in that series, then you'll appreciate the way that He-Man slash Prince Adam was portrayed in this movie. I'm going to end it here and say that I think Travis Knight and the people that created this movie understood the assignment of what people that have been fans of this franchise for 40 years now want it out of a Masters of the Universe movie. And a big giant fuck you to every single movie reviewer that I've come across on TikTok or Instagram that said something about this franchise being 50 or 70 years old. Go fuck yourselves, bro. Okay? Insulting comments like that are exactly why I say this movie is not made for you, because if you're trying to be funny and saying, oh, it's for old people, yeah, it is. Not everything's made for you, and that's okay. Get over it. And there has been some negative propaganda towards this movie, because when jabroni clowns come out word for word, and I'm watching, well, you know when something's propaganda, because you'll come across two or three videos that were just saying the same thing word for word, coming out to here saying Masters are going to be a box office flop, and that jabroni, Alex Pop Culture Brain, comes out with a review ripping the movie, you kind of lost all credibility, especially when I call you out on it and you block me on both accounts, okay? Just saying there, buddy. And I'm just saying here that the Yankees are heading back to Cleveland here. They're going to be there for the next 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, as we try to get a little revenge on the Guardians for after taking 2 out of 3 from the Yanks here this past week at the Bronx. You got Will Warren against Gavin Williams Monday at 6:40. Tuesday at 6:40, it's going to be Gerrit Cole against Slade Ciccone. And then Wednesday at 1:10, it's Carlos Rodon against Parker Mezick. So, again, you know, 2 out of 3 starters from the Guardians are likely to pitch really well. But we got Warren, Cole, and Rodon. Go win two games out of this three-game set here. So that's where we are with the Yankees coming up here. And hopefully where you are is subscribed to the NYYST podcast on this very podcast platform that you're listening to us on right now. Okay. This is the final season of NYYST, so don't miss any new shows as we move forward here through the final season. And please leave us a five-star rating review. We would love to hear from all the fans on our way out here in 2026. Make sure you are subscribed to NYY Underground on YouTube. The Bronx or Nowhere, we're supposed to be back this Thursday at 8:30. I'll have to check in with Kev. We had canceled last week because his son had a playoff game, so we're tentatively scheduled there to be back this Thursday. But subscribe anyway so you don't miss anything popping off at the U. And be sure to tell everybody, NYYST is the official Yankee podcast of Odyssey. We love you guys so much, and thank you for your support, not only through the final season, but all 10 seasons of NYYST. This has been episode 531. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less, with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range, and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked number one and number two in resale value over all vehicles according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.